You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
What is up, everybody, and welcome to the All NBA Show, part of the All City Podcast Network. I'm your host, Adam Matez, and I'm joined, as always, four times a week with my esteemed colleague, Tim Legler. Legs, happy Friday to you.
Happy Friday to you. It's been a great week, and it's going to be a great day. We got a lot of really good stuff to get into, including the most recent chapter of Chet Holmgren and Victor Wembanyama. So I'm really anxious to get this thing started there.
A great chapter, by the way, a really entertaining one with some great storylines. We have a very full show for you, so we're going to dive right into it because we're going to talk about that Thunder Spurs game, Wemby Chet. We're also going to talk about the Bucks, who have the number one defense since the All-Star break. We're going to talk about the Suns, who are figuring out their rotation and their lineups a little bit better, and then the Heat Nuggets game that was a rematch of last year's finals. Also, scoring down since the 70-point games. Is there something to that? Tom Haberstroh of the Finder thinks so. We're going to talk about his findings. We're also going to look and ask who won the week. So very full show. We'll dive right into it. But first, All NBA is sponsored by DraftKings. Stay tuned because there's more to hear about DraftKings and all they have to offer throughout the show. DraftKings, the crown is yours. If you have a gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Age and eligibility restrictions apply. Void where prohibited. See DraftKings.com for details. It was a close game, a two-point game going into the fourth. It was tied almost immediately to start the fourth quarter. Back and forth game, even though the Spurs had had control for most of the game, Thunder clawed their way back. But in the clutch, the Spurs, including Devin Vassell, but especially Victor Wembanyama, came up with some big-time three-pointers and were able to pull out the win 132-118. It was a masterclass of shot-making, I thought, down the stretch. What stood out to you about this one, Legs?
Oh, man, I got a lot of notes on this game, a lot of different trains of thought. So I'm going to start with this. The first thing is just watching this game and watching kind of what's transpired between them all year, meaning the two stars. And we know that Chet Holmgren's on a significantly better team right now. Hopefully that's trending upward for the Spurs here in the near future. But the first thing, Adam, that kind of jumps into my mind watching the two of them, Chet Holmgren was absolutely spectacular in the first half of this game. I mean, and it might be – people might think that's an overstatement. Go back and look at the subtleties and all of the different things that he did in this game. Yeah. And then Wembanyama was sensational in the second half and certainly down the stretch. So I'm thinking to myself, man, oh, man, is this great that we are going to get 12 to 15 years or more of this matchup. Now, who knows long term, you know, are they on the same teams down the road? Because if that's the case, it's great because you're going to play each other four times every year. And then who knows, you know, you get each other in the playoffs, you might get up 10, 11 opportunities to go head to head if they stay in the same conference.
I didn't even think of this,
So you're going to get, you know, in a given year, if they match up in the playoffs, you could get that and give me all of it. I want all of it because that's how I think entertaining and productive and impactful these two guys are. And by the way, I think it's clear to me now, I thought the first 2 months of the season, Chet Holmgren would have been, and you know, you don't vote on these awards. It's so early in the year, but you talk about it all the time. The rookie update, you know, the rookie watch. It was Holmgren. Holmgren, I thought by a wide margin early in the year, it's not the case anymore. I mean, Victor Wembanyama is going to win rookie of the year. I think he's going to win it actually decisively. It's not going to be close. With the number of things now that he's added to his game that he didn't have early in the season for a lot of reasons, just uncomfortable, lack of strength, lack of confidence probably more than anything, all new to him, a little bit of culture shock to what was going on out there. Happening so fast, the spotlight, you name it, a lot of stuff added up. And now he's just super comfortable. Everything he's doing is comfortable. And he still, every game, has two or three plays at least that he's the only player in the NBA that can make those plays.
Yep.
And so for me, he's now got a decisive edge. He's going to win it barring an injury. And I'm not even sure now. He's so late in the year. He could maybe even get hurt and still win it at this point.
I think you're right. I was thinking about that last night.
I want to say that first. Yeah, I want to start there, Adam. I want to get your thoughts on that. Like, how lucky are we that we're going to get this matchup? And I don't know if we call it a rivalry. You can't call it that yet, right? You just can't because they're not playing meaningful games against each other. It'll really turn into something when we get there. Hopefully we get there sooner rather than later with the Spurs. But it is right now one of the most compelling individual matchups when you see it on the slate that there is in the league. And they deliver, man. They deliver. They're so unique. And that's the first thought I had was, man, oh, man, are we lucky that we're going to get this going forward for a long time and potentially in a given year, you know, see it that many times, as I mentioned earlier.
Well, first of all, I love that you started with the rivalry because, you know, this, I'm covering Nuggets last night, so I only have one eye on that game, and then I'm catching up on it to today. And I'm reading the narratives, and it almost, people made it sound like this was a one-sided dominant performance from one guy just destroying the other guy. When I went back and watched it this morning, I was very impressed with Chet Holmgren. I was very impressed with what he did in this game, and I was kind of like, man, that guy was making a bunch of plays as well. So it was a great matchup of two great young players, both of whom I think are about the right things, both of whom have demonstrated a very steep learning curve, and I think both of whom really get up for this match. I mean, that's the other thing about it. When you talk about, is it a rivalry yet? I'm going to go ahead and call it a rivalry in part because of how unique they are, that they match up against each other, but also because they see it as a rivalry. And I thought that last night, Chet Holmgren, to me, one of the things I love about him is he never presses. He never steps outside of his lane. This is the second game in a row they've matched up, and it's not a lot. I don't want to overstate this, but in the fourth quarter, I felt like there was a little bit of Chet pressing, and that just goes to show you that this matchup means so much to him, that it's like, all right, I got to get him back now. I got to go here. I got to do this. And again, it's not a bit, it's not a lot, but it was just enough for me to say, okay, this matchup means a little extra to him, and it gives you a window into his psyche. But the story was Victor for me, Victor Wembanyama. I mean, Jokic gets these triple-doubles, and you're like, wow, I don't even know if, you know, it wasn't loud, but there he is with a triple-double or whatever. Wemby gets 4x5s that way. Like, he's gonna set a record for 5x5s. I already said he's going to set a record for quintuple-doubles in his career, and he's going to set a record for 4x5s, which is, you know, last night he had 5 blocks. Of course he did. Of course he had 5 assists. Of course he had 5 rebounds. Of course he had 5 points. So the casual nature with which he is able to affect the game to pick up stats and his steep learning curve. And here's the thing I want to ask you. A lot of players, especially young players, the hardest thing to do is to build the foundation and go one step at a time. Everybody wants to go to step 3, 4, 5 because that's the fun stuff. I think this year, one of the most impressive things about Wembanyama has been that he has really built foundations and been patient. And I think the Spurs have been patient with him. I wasn't sure if Popovich would be the right coach for him early on in the year, but I think it's been very clear that he's been building foundations. And as the year has gone on, he's been able to move up the pyramid, so to speak. And now all these things are unlocked with a solid foundation under him. So I actually love the patience with which he's developed this year because it's all coming together now.
Yeah, and that patience, that's directly attributed to Greg Popovich and the plan for him going in. And it was probably a little frustrating for us in the beginning of the year because you wanted to see more. But, you know, they had a minutes restriction. And they also had just, an impact restriction almost offensively. You know, I watched him early, and it was like nothing was run for him. He was just kind of floating around out there. And I think that was by design. They didn't want it to become the Wemby show where you're throwing him the ball in the post and he's not ready to operate down there yet against these guys. Right. And now it looks bad. And I think all of it was by design. And look, there's a reason, you know, going into last night, Oklahoma City has won 30 more games than the Spurs going into last night, you know, so now they've got 41 wins, Spurs 12. And it was all kind of set up that way. They didn't really care. It was all about Victor Wembanyama's development and making sure that he didn't get frustrated or he didn't feel like there was just this, you know, insane amount of pressure on him to deliver. And he would have had a mark on him, I think, more often by other teams if that's how they started out, like making it all about him, and they didn't. And I think that actually helped him, even though it was frustrating for us as fans, as media members at the beginning of the season. That's gone now. And he did a few things last night. One thing in particular that made me say, this league is in a lot of trouble.
So curious which one it is.
All right, he had a post up on the left block in the first half. First half. He posted up on the left block. I don't remember who was defending him, but he caught the ball. He kind of looked toward the middle of the floor, waited to see if the double team was coming. He took one dribble, like toward the middle. Double team started to come from the top. He spun away toward the baseline and shot a fadeaway jump shot from about 15, 16 feet that was so natural and so smooth looking. And earlier in the year, he would try a move like that, and it didn't look that way. He looked like his feet got a little tangled up. He wasn't sure if he should be shooting that shot. Well, that's gone now. You have taken that tiny little bit of hesitation that he had in the beginning of the year that interrupts muscle memory. It's gone now. It's all instinctive. And when he made that shot, I said to myself, that might be the most unblockable, unguardable, uncontestable shot of any player in the league. What he did, because he shot it so effortlessly, Adam, and he faded away like out of bounds by the time he released it. Absolutely no issue. He looked like a guy that's been his go-to shot for 10 years in the league. That's what it looked like. And that just kind of blew me away how natural and comfortable that looked to him. The other thing was, it was a couple defensive plays that he had. And I know everybody's making a lot about the block he had on Chet late in the game, when Chet was kind of going one-on-one and went to a pull-up jumper, and he timed it up and blocked it and gripped it. It was really amazing. But he had another one on Shai Gilgeous-Alexander in the first half when he was completely out of the play. He was on the opposite side of the lane, and Shai, who, by the way, reminded me again last night, is filthy. I know how good Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is. I don't know anybody scores easier in the league. I think it's him and Luka, probably 1-2. Just how effortlessly it looks. Anyway, he made a move on a spin move, and he's so used to doing it and just getting to that finger roll, because his spin is so tight off your body at the foul line area. He comes out of it, one more stride, he's shooting that finger roll. Wemby was on the opposite side of the lane and blocked it with his left hand at the last second so quickly that – I had to watch it twice because I wasn't sure. I'm like, did he get a piece of that? Because he was so far away from him when he released it. I didn't know if the defender on his hip got a piece of it. And then I watched the replay. I'm like, nope, he got that. He basically blocked it with his wrist. And the ball just shot the other direction, and it kind of triggered a fast break. So there were a couple plays in that game. Again, and look, a lot of guys can make a turnaround jump shot. That's not one of the ones I say only he's making that play. He had a couple other of those offensively on lobs that he caught that made right. No sense that he caught it and got it in the basket from where he was standing. The turnaround jumper to tell me like that's now a part of his game, he's going to start going to – how are you supposed to stop that if that's what you want to do, especially when you ran a double team and he still shot it? And then the defensive stuff, some of the blocks he gets to from where he is when the player leaves the floor defy logic that he's able to still get there and bother him. So – yeah, you're right. I mean, blown away by him, but I thought Chet Holmgren was great in this game, particularly in the first half. You know, so this is going to be fun, Adam, going forward. I can't wait until the Spurs are competitive and we eventually one day get a best of seven between these two teams and these two players. I mean, it doesn't get much better than that.
I think it's going to be next year. I honestly do with the Spurs that it's next year, because I think that they have to. I'm just trying to use logic here. Anybody that watches how this season has unfolded has to look at that and say, yes, if we put a team around Wemby, it's going to be great. Usually it's like, all right, we got to go slow, 2-3 years of development. Then year four, we're going to start to bring in veterans. We're going to do this. I think if you look at Victor Wembanyama, you go, why not put another star player around him? We could trade some assets. We're ready to go. We don't need to wait for that ramp up. And here's some crazy stats. Since the All-Star break, he's five games since the All-Star break. These are his block shots. 5, 5, 5, 4, and 5. You just pencil it in for 5 blocks right now. That's not normal. That's not a thing. That's higher than Dikembe Mutombo. That's higher than Akeem Olajuwon's prime. And he's doing this as a rookie now. And if you
mean to cut you off. I just want to ask you. I want you to clarify when you say you think next year. So what do you? And I know this is stupid to project. You know, we're not projecting win totals here. 25 games left in this season. Right. And also not knowing what else they do to the roster over the summer and whatnot. But when you say that, are you saying that you think the San Antonio Spurs are going to be, you know, like a 500 or above team next year?
Well, with this roster, no. I mean, my point is they have done the classic tanking thing. All right, we have a young player. We're going to make him, you know, we're not going to put players around him because we want him to be the center of the universe. But you go through this year and you go, okay, he's the center of the universe. We can bring in, and I know there's been rumors about a Trae Young or something like that. I'm not saying that that'll be the guy. But if I'm the Spurs and I'm looking around this summer at the next stars that are wanting a trade, usually you would slow play it and say, we're not ready. I just think they're ready. And if they wanted to say, okay, we don't need our 2030 first round pick, we're ready to build around this guy and start going. That's what I mean. So I'm not trying to project what this roster is. I'm just saying the Spurs, I think, should feel confident enough that Victor is far enough along in his development that they can put a second star around him. And if they did that, then who knows? To me, it's like, nope, they're going to be a playoff team next year if you gave him another all-star.
The the leaps and bounds he has made offensively with his reading of double teams. You know, last night he made a couple plays he wasn't making earlier in the year either, where he's now getting doubled more with his back to the basket. He wasn't really the beginning of the year because it wasn't going to be a quality possession. He was going to shoot something that was advantageous to the defense. That's not the case anymore. So now he's starting to see more traffic. He had a couple plays last night where he had the ball maybe 10, 12 feet or so off the lane. He had his back turned, so he's starting to think about, you know, getting into some sort of move. Here comes the double team, and he wasn't doing this earlier in the year. The escape dribble away from the lane as the second defender's coming to give him a better angle to make the next pass, whether that was to the top of the key or twice on cuts from the weak side, where it would have been more difficult for him to make it from where he was because the spacing wasn't as good. So now you take a dribble away from the lane, you're dragging two more defenders with you away from the lane. There's less traffic in there. The cutters now are more open because there's more distance between you and the recipient. Yeah. Like little subtle things like that, that he wasn't doing earlier in the year, are just so impressive now. And this the all-around comfort with which he's playing offensively. I also think, I don't know if you remember this, but you know, we've been doing this progress report on Wembanyama throughout the year. I don't know how many of these discussions we've had, probably about four maybe or more.
Yep, four or five.
And there was a time, Adam, I didn't think he was changing ends of the floor like with full effort. He looked to me like this is when they were losing all those games at the beginning of the year, and it looked like it had demoralized them a little bit. Like we knew they weren't in a non-competitive environment, but he looked like now he was carrying himself as a non-competitive player in that way. And that I've noticed that that's changed. He's busting it now. He's busting it to get back. So things are clicking for him from a maturity standpoint. He understands responsibility that's going to come with his greatness. There's a lot of responsibility on your plate, and he looks like he's born to live up to it. And he also looks to me, Adam, like the dude loves basketball. And that sounds crazy, but we've had a lot of guys picked in the top five that did not love it to this extent. When you combine the unique physical package with the skill set with that last component, how bad do you want this? Now you've got this potentially once in a lifetime type of talent. And so, man, last night was fun. And this was a good game up until, you know, that last stretch by the Spurs when they got the separation. And, you know, you wake up this morning, you see a 14-point game. Wasn't like that. It was a very good game, well played. A lot of tremendous individual plays and shot making in this game. Super entertaining, considering, you know, one team has got 12 wins. It was a very entertaining game.
It was a very entertaining game. And I want to go to this now because you're talking about him loving basketball. And you're right, especially bigs. Like, seven-footers, they get funneled to basketball because you're 7 feet tall. You don't have – I'm always worried about bigs and whether they love the game because it didn't necessarily take the same development to get discovered. You're 7 feet tall in high school. People are going to make you play basketball. But Vic clearly loves it. I believe – this is so cliche, but he has the it factor. And I've thought it for a while, but last night, the 40-foot three-pointer he took, which was a huge shot, that was a three-point game in the fourth quarter, he pulls up in transition with 20 seconds on the clock with confidence. I would call it a bad shot, legs, but he drained it. And then he had another three in the corner that was kind of a tough one that he took with confidence and drained it. And just his approach in the last 5 minutes, he carried himself with like a guy that was like, nope, this is a good team, second seed, but we're going to beat him tonight. And that's an it factor that not a lot of 19-year-olds have, let alone somebody of you know, his stature. So, and then afterwards, you talked about, you know, coachable wanting this or that. Grab the mic and address the crowd, and just the way he addressed the crowd and talked about it and embraced. Not everybody gets that. Not everybody has the charisma for it, but not everybody understands also the responsibility that they are carrying and embraces it with such grace. I couldn't be more impressed with him in that way. And I think that those things are meaningful.
Completely agree. Look, I don't know to what extent they've had Tim Duncan involved, but
you talk about
the perfect person to, and look, Tim Duncan wasn't a guy that really loved the media very much. He didn't have that gregarious personality, even though they say behind the scenes he was like that. He was beloved by his teammates. He was just about showing up every day and being dominant on both ends and understanding the responsibility that came with who he was. He would have been the number one pick probably 4 years in a row. And he understood what that meant and what that meant to the franchise. And he went to the perfect place, by the way. That's a great market for a guy like Victor Wembanyama to be in, because they show up and support that team every single night. They're not too hard on the Stars. They're not too hard when they're losing games. They're not too hard when you're in a shooting slump. They love their Spurs, and they're going to support you. And that enables guys to gain confidence earlier, and also it enables them to regain their confidence if they lose it at some point, because right. they have total support. He went to the perfect place. He went to the perfect role model. If you know him, I'm sure he and Tim Duncan have spoken. I don't know to what extent Tim Duncan has been involved, but I'm just saying, if you want a path for what Victor Wembanyama should aspire to be in terms of the professionalism and getting the most out of yourself, and particularly the responsibility on both ends of being a leader by your play, that's it. And so he went to the perfect organization for that.
Yeah. I have two more quick notes for you on him. One, I think he's going to be the greatest late shot clock shot blocker in history, in part because of his mobility and his length. There was a couple times last night when the shot clock gets down to like 3-2. There's not enough time for a pass. So what does he do? He's guarding somebody in the corner. Not enough time for you to make that skip pass. So I'm going to fully commit to running to the rim and just putting my hands up. And if you don't have time to pass and you just have to find an angle around a guy, a 7'4" guy, full sprint, running and jumping, like, you can't get a shot off there. And he had multiple where either he blocked it or he just jumped and put his hands up and it was impossible. And I think that he's going to learn that lesson as time goes on. Looking at the clock, 3-2, full on blitz, because there's nothing you could, there's too late for the pass. And then the other one was, his team is going to have to relearn defense as time goes on, because your natural instinct is to stunt. When a guy's driving, you stunt off your guy and getting the passing or getting the driving lanes. He doesn't need it. There were several times last night where I thought the Spurs stunted out of position, when I thought, until a guy consistently beats him off the dribble and scores at the rim, I wouldn't stunt. Just stay home, because he's too long and too good at recovering and blocking shots that you have to rewire your instincts.
It's all great, man. Obviously we're both very enamored with what we saw. It's been phenomenal every time we've checked in at these updates, the Wemby update show. Yep. It's been moving that thing forward, right? He has significantly moved this needle forward, raised the bar every single time, to the point where, like, this is the best version of him, what we saw last night. It was just sensational. I do want to make a couple points on Oklahoma City. Because look, obviously they've had a great year, and they're in the mix, and we're all trying to figure out still how legit they are as a threat in the Western Conference. Some did jump out to me last night. I'm watching it, and you know, it wasn't necessarily a great night to kind of come to this conclusion, because, you know, don't think I'm cherry picking one game, but I'm watching this game, and I've already said what Shea is. Shea's unstoppable. He's an unstoppable offensive force. There's just nothing you can do to limit him as a scorer. He's too good. He's got too many counters to what you bring. We've talked about Chet a ton. We know how we feel about Jalen Williams. You're on the same page about that. The guy has arrived as that second guy that you need that can go do it every night. I'm a little bit worried about the other two spots in their starting rotation. If you really want to talk about challenging, and look, Dort is shooting 39% for the year from the three-point line. They lead the league in three-point percentage. Get all that. I still think those spots need to be upgraded. You know, Josh Giddey, if I'm sitting there watching this game last night, Adam, and I'm going, if Josh Giddey could shoot,
yeah,
the Thunder could end up in the conference finals if they avoided Denver. Right. If Josh Giddey could shoot, like, it's that important because of the way they play and the spacing that you get and the amount of attention that Shai Gilgeous-Alexander commands, and Chet, because Chet, everything he does is efficient and purposeful, and it leads directly to defensive reaction, which means there's open looks to be had. And last night, Dort and Giddey went 1-for-9 combined. I know it's not – so I'm not trying to pick on them on one game. Like I said, Dort's had a pretty good year shooting the ball. Are you going to count on Dort and Giddey in big spots in the playoffs, when you start to have defenses that are set up game by game to adjust? Like I just said, you're not gonna stop Shai as a scorer, but you definitely can figure out ways to make it harder for him. And if it becomes harder for him, or he's less efficient to get to his number, then that's gonna be because of the load up that you're gonna get, and there's going to be shots to be had. Do you trust Giddey and Dort on the court in those spots to make big shots, to break your back? Because when you look at historically in the playoffs, It takes that, and it takes it almost every night. You get one of those games from somebody that you maybe didn't expect it, where Dort might have to make five or six threes. And he had like naked looks last night. And that's why I guess maybe it jumped out to me more. That's because why. Even though he's shooting a good percentage, I'm just like, it's just, I don't know that I have faith in it. And certainly I don't at all for Giddey. He's just not a good shooter. So I'm looking at Gordon Hayward last night. First of all, before I get into Hayward, because it's connected to this, let me get your thoughts on what I just said about those two guys.
I 100% agree. When we were doing the best starting fives or closing fives the other day, this is why I brought up Isaiah Joe and why I think that he's going to, in the regular season, they've really closed a lot with Giddey, and he obviously starts. But I think that in the playoffs, they're going to have to go to Isaiah Joe just because they need his shooting for that very reason. It becomes zero sum in the playoffs. Teams say, okay, here's what they don't do well, and are we capable of forcing them to overload at doing that thing? And that's going to be Dort and Giddey threes, and they're just going to say they take 3-4 a game. We're going to make them take 8 a game because we're going to be able to force it to that, and then their whole win-loss comes down to, do those guys make shots? I think you're going to swap in Isaiah Joe on those, so I agree with you, and I think that they already probably know what they're going to have to do, but that compromises them in a different way.
All right. Love it. So now we move on to Gordon Hayward. Now, he missed 2 months. He didn't play basketball for 2 months. He's been back for 5 games. He's done absolutely nothing. He's a shell of what he used to be. I don't know is there a better version of Gordon Hayward to be had here that they can find over the last 20-plus games where he gets himself in shape? Because to me, if you have Gordon Hayward, I think he's going to be able to do a lot of the things Giddey can do, but he's a significantly better scorer. So now you have a guy that can give you a little bit more, because it's not, because Giddey, for the most part, like, you know, he's going to facilitate. I said he's a ball mover. That's why I like him. But so is Gordon Hayward. That's what I've always liked about Hayward throughout his career. But he's also a guy that at his best was a really good scorer in this league. Now, I know those days are behind him. He's had too many injuries. He's missed too much time. He looked flat out uncomfortable last night. Like, he just, and I don't know what to make of that, Adam. Like, because if I think that this is something he's going to play through, and he gets to a place where he's able to play 20 to 28 minutes a game for them in the same spot that Giddey and Dort are playing, and he's at even like the minimum level that he was at in Charlotte, if he can just get where he's a 12 to 15 point type player and does it pretty efficiently, with his size and his passing and the other things he does, but he's just a better offensive player than those two guys. That to me is significant. I just don't know if that's going to happen the way he's looked so far in these first 5 games. Everything about it looked weird to me. The uniform he had on, the number he was wearing. Everything. You just forgot Gordon Hayward was on the team, and you're like watching the game. Like, you know, he took 3 shots. He's 0-for-3. He's like, didn't really have any sort of impact in the game. 12 minutes, just kind of ran around, didn't do anything. And I was like, this is the first time I really watched him. And I looked up, he's had 5 games, and it's all pretty much looked the same. Yeah. And I'm just, what do you think about Hayward now, Hayward going forward? And do you agree that if he's able to find some version of himself, that is, I think, a significant upgrade to their rotation?
Well, first of all, in 5 games since the All-Star break, he's averaging about 15 minutes a game. And in 3 of those games, he has 0 points, including last night. So he's only scored in 2 of the 5 games, and he's getting 15 minutes. And they're calling on him to kind of get, you know, do something with the ball. I think the injury, here's what's tough. 2 things are tough. One, it's hard to separate what he is now, because let's be honest, nobody's really, very few people have been watching him consistently in Charlotte the last 2 years. That's a team you check in on once a month, not a team you're watching all the time. And then 2, coming off of injuries when you're his age is always tough. So last night, what stood out, there's only one play that stood out to me about Gordon Hayward last night, and that was the fourth quarter. He drives the ball to the basket, no separation at all. In fact, not only was there no separation, it was the slowest drive I've ever seen in my life. He ends up throwing up a wild hook shot because it was all he could do. And I just remember thinking, like, that guy physically does not have it at this moment. Now, does he not have it at this moment, or does he not have it anymore? I don't know. We'll have to see. I do think that you're right conceptually, that he would be a connector player that does the things that they need, that can play that in-between spot. But I haven't seen enough of him in the last 2 years, let alone in the last, you know, 2 weeks, to know if he's just on the upswing or if he's just a shell of himself. I don't know.
Fair enough. I think that's, for looking at Oklahoma City, I have a very good feel for what they are. I've seen them all year. I know what their, I think I know what their ceiling is. And I just am trying to find a way that there's something more left to squeeze, that, that there's another X percentage points that they're better than they've been. And I think he would be like the only guy I can look at and say, maybe you get it from there. Because I know what that starting five is. I know what all five of those guys are and what you're going to get. And I just don't know if that's enough with Gideon Dort in those two spots, playing off of, you know, three really, really talented offensive players. But look, they're 41 and 18, man. So it's worked to this point, but that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about making a run at the Western Conference and what that's going to mean and entail and who you're going to have to play potentially immediately in the first round. So they're an interesting team. I love the way they play. I love their chemistry. I love the young talent. We're just trying to figure out ways if, you know, if there's more there, something else that they can get out of their current roster.
All right, let's take our first break. You know, I will say we got to get a Thunder game where we really spend some time on the Thunder, because you and I talk Thunder a lot. We love the Thunder, and we always seem to be discussing them after a loss or in opposition to some flaw that they have, which is true. We give our honest opinions, but there's also a lot of good stuff, and we'll get to Oklahoma City sometime next week in detail. But on the other side, the Milwaukee Bucks, the number one defense since the All-Star break. Is that a sign of things to come? We'll talk about that and more. But first, get in on the action with DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. New customers who deposit $5 or more can get a no-sweat bet up to $1,000 back in bonus bets. Right now, tonight, you can check out Celtics-Mavs. There's some really good games this weekend. I can't wait till we talk about the weekend slate. The Celtics, -395 on the money line. The Vegas believes that this is going to be a relatively easy win for the Celtics, but Luka and the Mavs have something special cooked up. Luka also is over under 3.5 three-pointers tonight. He's been making his threes, and then his points, rebounds, and assists is at 49.5. Do you think he's going to get 50 points, rebounds, and assists combined? If so, hop on DraftKings Sportsbook, and you can make that bet. And even if you think not, then go ahead and bet against it. You can bet no on that bet, and you can get great odds on that as well. So download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use code ALLNBA. New customers, that's one word, by the way, all NBA. New customers get that no-sweat bet up to $1,000 if your bet loses. Only on DraftKings Sportsbook with code ALLNBA. The crown is yours. If you have a gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. That's 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 or older, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. One no-sweat bet per new customer issued at one bonus bet based on amount of initial losing bet. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/promos for deposit, wagering, and eligibility restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources. Also want to tell you about the Game Time app. Oop. Do we have another one here, Emma, or not? I think we do. Emma, do we have the second ad read? I think we do.
Yeah, we do. I made a mistake.
There you go. Tell you guys about the Game Time app. It is the weekend. If you're looking to get out to a game, as I mentioned, there's some great games on the slate. So if you are in Boston and you want to check out the Mavs game, or if you're in Minnesota and want to see Sacramento come to town, or maybe you're in New Orleans and want to see Halliburton and the Pacers, hop on the Game Time app. See if there's last-minute ticket deals to be had. They always have those flash deals. You can set an alert and get a notification, a push notification on your phone whenever prices drop. They have zone deals, and they have a very easy app to be able to peruse different prices and different seats. They can show you what it looks like from a different seat. Download the Game Time app, create an account, and use code ALLNBA for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Again, create an account and redeem code ALLNBA for $20 off. Download Game Time today. Last-minute tickets, lowest prices guaranteed. All right, back here with Tim Legler. Don't forget, if you're watching this on YouTube live, throw us a like. Help us grow the show. Leave comments. If you're watching it late, also throw us a like. Make sure to hit that subscribe button. We're doing this 4 times a week, breaking down the X's and O's. We have some cool new products that are coming onto this channel as well as we ramp up for the playoffs that I'm very excited to share with you here in the coming days, maybe weeks. But let's turn our attention now to the Milwaukee Bucks, 111-99. They keep winning, and they keep winning with defense. We always talked about, you get a new coach in there, it's going to take some time to really build some new defensive principles. They seem to have that, Legs, because they have the number one defense coming out of the All-Star break. Now, they played the Charlotte Hornets twice. That always helps. But nonetheless, they're showing some signs of the defense that they used to be back when they were winning championship. What do you see from them in this game?
Yeah, I'm glad you did say that about Charlotte, because you can't just let that slide. That they're dreadful. I mean, they're dreadful.
Played them twice too.
There's no other way to put it, man. And they got a really nice young player in Brandon Miller, and he continues to impress me. They found one in him. He's legit. He's going to be a big time player, but they are hard to watch. So it's hard to know how much to make of it. Obviously, coming out of the break, they had just hit rock bottom with that loss against Memphis, and they go into the break. They come out of the break. Schedule's been a little bit favorable. They did get a good win against Minnesota right off the bat, but then it's been Philly without Embiid and two games against Charlotte. So, you know, it's you know, hard to really dive into it too much. The fact that the raw numbers are down regardless, that's nice. That's a good start. And I think when I've watched them play, and I watched 2.5 of the 4 games since the break, they do look to me like that they're just playing a little bit harder, right? It just looks different on that end of the floor. They seem a little bit more purposeful and intent on what they're doing, and they're connected a little bit better. That's the place to start. Let's start there, okay. Right? Just looking at film as a head coach, you come in, how, you know, schematically changing a ton. It's hard to do. You certainly, listen, every head coach in this league, and Doc's been around a long time, I can go over probably the 6 to 8 ways that you defend ball screen or dribble handoff. This is flat out a league of ball screen, dribble handoff, the occasional post up and the occasional ISO. It's about the ball screen and the dribble handoff and then defending the transition threes. Like those 5 things, that's really all defense encompasses. And there's only so many coverages on dribble, right, handoff and ball screen. They're just only – so what it comes down to is identifying what's best for your personnel. And also being able to, this is through repetition, which is hard in the NBA now because you don't practice a lot on your off days. It's hard to get down to where you don't necessarily play every ball screen and every dribble handoff the same way, depending on who your 2 guys are defending it and who their 2 guys are running it. You can switch that on the fly, possession by possession, if you have great communication skills defensively. That takes time. That is something, right, that a new head coach, that's the kind of thing he could change, but that's going to take longer than we've seen to this point. You certainly can look at film and watch guys jogging back after a turnover, and that can be corrected right now. That, right. Okay, can you guys give me 10 more percent right here? 10 more percent, right, sprinting back. Guess what? They don't get that 3. Oh, that's easy to clean up, and I've seen some of that, the schematic stuff. That's harder. There's only so much you can do, and it takes more time. That takes more like an offseason and a training camp to figure out what you want to do. Rotationally, that's also in the coach's hands. You know, you might come in right off the bat and be like, this guy's playing 26 minutes a game, and that's just not your vibe. That guy should be playing 12 minutes a game, and this guy that's playing 8 minutes a game should be playing 20 because of what you see in your personal preference. So that's another thing that you can tweak. Day one, you can hopefully initiate some change. We're now in big enough sample size. Doc's what he wants and thinks, they're starting to now take effect and permeate. So even though, yeah, the schedule has been pretty favorable, I'm seeing some positive trends and some positive signs out of the Milwaukee Bucks. And look, the top of the East is still, there's a lot of uncertainty there. This was a team that kind of, you know, hey, penciled in for the conference finals minimum, maybe a title. And then we were all taking a step back. God, they're horrible defensively. I don't know if they can overcome it. But who really filled that void? The Cavs to a certain extent, but I don't know how much people truly believe in them. And then, right, the Knicks, and they're absolutely just so banged up right now, and Philly loses Embiid. So it's still kind of a mess at the top of the East besides Boston, and now the Bucks are starting to reclaim some of that ground. And it's incremental. It's small sample size. Not very good teams are playing, but it matters, Adam.
Yeah. And I even thought, we talked the other day about Dame, and some of this has to be Dame and him committing to defense. I thought in the last couple of games that I've seen from them, he's looked a little bit more dialed in on that end. Here's what I'll say about Milwaukee. If you are buying Milwaukee and you're buying, because I agree with everything you said, defense takes time. It's cultural. It's timing. It's rhythm. It's chemistry. Defense is chemistry just like offense is. And so it's like turning a cruise ship. It's not a hard left. You got to kind of slowly push the boat in a different direction. And it appears they're doing that. Yes, it has been a very light schedule. Philadelphia, Charlotte 2 times. But guess what? Those are the breaks. They got Chicago tonight. That's another game they should win. So I look at that and I go, that's the stabilizing part of their schedule. If you believe what we've seen since the All-Star break, this four-game winning streak, if you believe in the defense, then you should hop on DraftKings and make a finals bet right now for the Milwaukee Bucks. Because after this stretch, after Chicago, they've got the Clippers, the Warriors, the Lakers, the Clippers again, Sacramento, Phoenix, Boston. They run into the juggernauts, or at least the upper echelon of the NBA after this, all in a row. And if they really have used this easy part of their schedule to stabilize, then they're going to make a statement during that two-week stretch. And I kind of expect it. I actually think that there is something too. Their defense always didn't make sense. Using Giannis a little bit more as the low man, using him as a drop guy and protecting the rim, they've had success doing that in the past. They seem to be getting back to it. And I actually think that this next 2 weeks, we're going to see the Milwaukee Bucks make a steep increase, a climb in everybody's minds and probably in the betting odds as, okay, there's the team that we kind of expected when the Dame trade happened.
I agree with that. And which leads me to my next point with the Bucks about Damian Lillard. He still is not there in terms of comfort zone, playing instinctively, just, you know, playing the same way he did in Portland. I just looked it up. I believe he's only had 3 30-point games since the turn of the calendar year. And I understand you're playing with Giannis, but beyond that, there's not a ton of firepower on this team. There's a bunch of role players. That's really what you have outside of those two. So you would think there'd be more nights when it's like he really gets cooking. And so there's just something like not quite there with Damian Lillard. And the other thing that, and I've been said this before, but last night it kind of stood out to me. And this was in a game that they pretty much controlled easily. But I'm watching it saying, it's an interesting pairing between these two players. Okay, because Damian Lillard has a casualness about him, right? In the way that he plays, kind of just goes about
it. I see what you mean. He's smooth, yeah.
Yeah, and it's just like, just everything's just kind of like, even coming up the court, it's just kind of like this easy shuffle. And then he has these quick bursts where he goes, and he'll shoot a step back three, or boom, blow by somebody, get to the rim on those spurts when he's trying to be an aggressive scorer. And I'm just looking at the pairing with this other guy who only knows one speed at all times, like intensity, run through a brick wall, every trip, every night, win every sprint in practice. Like, that's Giannis Antetokounmpo. And then you got Dame. It's just kind of – and it's kind of like – it looks like a player without like, you know, making too big a deal of this. It looks like a guy that's been in a situation in Portland for his whole career, never really was on a team that had super high expectations. And that's kind of how he goes about his business. And so my point is, when he's getting 30 regularly, you don't care as much about that because that's like his job. Drive this bus, right? Be the engine of this thing. Your responsibility tonight is to get us 30 and maybe 40 and maybe more, depending on what it takes. And there's other guys out here to do that other stuff. Well, in this situation, now there are serious expectations. And this will be a failure if you don't win it. I believe that. If you pair two players together like this every year, you're expecting to win a championship. That's my opinion. And I think that's kind of where they would be. And so the expectations are higher. He doesn't have to do the same things that he did in Portland necessarily, which means there should be more energy devoted to other things. And so I just was watching the pairing. I'm thinking, like, when you find two guys, Adam, that are both like stars and their talents not only are in sync, but also their mentality about it are in sync, now you've got something special. Like Jokic and Murray is a great example of that. I actually think Durant and Booker have that. Like, I think that's the perfect guy. I think that's the perfect guy to play next to Kevin Durant. I don't think they mesh as well, their games as well as like Jokic and Murray do. I think that their mentality and their competitiveness and how bad they want to go at guys. Like, I think that's something that they can relate to in each other. And I'm looking at the pairing with Lillard and Antetokounmpo, and it's just something is not quite there. And obviously it's Dame because he's not quite the same. And I don't think he's lost anything. He's not at that age. I just think it's all been different for him. And it doesn't feel as natural for him to do what he normally does on a basketball court. And I wonder if they can't find a way to unlock that more often, then I don't know that they can challenge a team like Boston.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYN ads.com.
Okay. Well, you just mentioned Phoenix, and I'm so curious because, you know, a 110, I didn't see this game, but 110-105 win at home over the Rockets doesn't seem impressive. But I know from our text preparing for the show, you seemed pretty impressed with what you saw from them, and in particular with them finding the way they're going to run their rotation and the different lineup combos they get to. What is it that you saw?
I think one of the big things for me is, and you know, it pounded a point home that I thought wouldn't happen, but now I'm really starting to see it. Like, Royce O'Neal is just such an upgrade over Okogie. He's just a different player. He's a higher level player. Okogie has a role in this team. He's got a role in this league, and he's a guy that he's got a lot of energy. He likes to guard. It's great. Royce O'Neal's a better player. Royce O'Neal is gonna have moments in the playoffs. He's gonna have games where he makes six threes, maybe seven threes. He's gonna have games like that, and it's just so important because of what you're committing to defend those guys. I mentioned what I said about Booker and Durant, and when Booker gets going early in the game, I think it's much more important for them than Durant. Durant is a guy, and because he's used to doing it, playing with Westbrook, playing with those guys in Brooklyn. He's just used to, like, you know what, man, whatever you got to do, it's cool. Even at Golden State, there were nights in Golden State, and he kind of quickly became like their best player. But he could also go 6-7 minutes, man. At the beginning, it's like, fine, you guys do what you got to do. I'm going to get mine. I'm going to get 30 efficiently because that's what I do. And so I think when Booker gets going early, it's very important for their team. And he did it last night. And when he gets going, he's in that category with Shea and Luka, like how easy it comes and how he strings together baskets. There's no answer for him. So I think their chemistry is pretty good. I like the O'Neal upgrade over Okogie. And then this other one kind of stood out to me, and I don't know if it's going to happen, but I'm watching Bol Bol last night and I'm going, is this guy, like, is he worthy of being in your rotation? He played 26 minutes last night, 7 points, four boards, but he just looked comfortable. And he had other plays where he affected it because of his length. You could tell he made something happen defensively just because he was kind of in the area because he's so long. He spaces out pretty well. He made a couple plays off the dribble. And I'm going, man, you know, he's an interesting guy to give them some additional size, you know, where you have length on the floor. If you don't have Nurkic and you need to play a different way, you still have a guy that's over 7 feet tall, that's long, and you can play maybe a different kind of lineup because he's very, very good offensive player. So that's another thing kind of jumped out at me last night.
Like,
so much run, and it looked like they took him out one time for like just only a couple minutes. They put him back in the game, and it was like still like pretty much could go either way. I'm like, wow, maybe they found some confidence in this guy that, you know, could he be, or I could be dead wrong and get to the playoffs and you never see Bol Bol again. I don't know, but he's intriguing to me with a team that you're looking for, again, ways to find better out of your rotational spots, and maybe he could give them something.
A player like, I mean, he gets 26 minutes, the most off of the bench. He almost plays as many minutes as Yusuf Nurkic last night, and he was a game-high plus 13. So, I mean, you're not just saying this as out of novelty. He's been making a positive impact over the last 2 months or so. The player that you could compare him to, not stylistically, but Boban was this way, where it was like, man, you could use him as this curveball in the regular season when a team's on like a four-game road trip and they're visiting you and they're just not thinking about Boban and they're not prepared for him. And all of a sudden, Boban goes in as a plus 15 in 10 minutes and the game's over. Bol Bol might be that. He might just be a guy that in the regular season, it's like, man, what a curveball to throw at us when we're not prepared for it. And then in a playoffs, you're able to exploit him. Or maybe not. To your point, it's been happening enough now that you look at it and go, I don't know, maybe he is just, he's such a unique player that you have to like think about him. Even if he's not good or whatever, you still have to think about, okay, well, that's a weird thing that we have to prepare for, and maybe he's that. Is there any other quick notes you have on this Phoenix Suns game?
No, that's it. You know, other than, you know, I continue to be impressed by Nurkic and what he's giving them and the presence he's giving. Also, yeah, one last thing. One thing about Devin Booker, man, he knows how to get under guys' skin. He got into it with Cam Whitmore. I mean, Cam Whitmore is ready to lose his mind. And you know, for a rookie, you're like, wow, you know, to get that heated, you don't see that too often. Like, what is Booker saying? He's always got something he's saying, like on the sly, that gets dudes just completely enraged. And Şengün got thrown out of the game in the second half, got a little heated there. So it got a little bit chippy. It was interesting from that standpoint. It got very competitive once the Rockets cut into that lead and made it a game. But I don't know, just Booker cracks me up because he's, you know, he's got that look on his face, and sometimes they'll zoom in on him and he's not saying anything, but some dude's ready to kill him. And you're like, well, we did something. So that kind of was just a funny component to the game. Like Booker, there are a lot of dudes that have a problem with Devin Booker, and it's because he's just got this cockiness about him when he gets cooking.
That's he has really a smirk, man. He has a punchable face, I would say. And I'm not saying that just trying to incite violence. He has an all-time smirk to him. Just this little like, oh man, he get under my skin for sure. The other game real quickly that we'll touch on, the Nuggets get the win 103-97 over the Heat. 103-97. I don't know if you've noticed. Well, first of all, that's smash mouth basketball. We saw this in the finals last year. That's the two, in my opinion, I've talked about this a lot, the two toughest teams in the NBA, mentally and physically tough. They can win grinded out games, both of them. And, you know, it was a rematch of the finals and it lived up to the hype. On TNT, it was a really good game. But what stood out to me is 103-97. It wasn't but 2 months ago that we were seeing 150 to 160, you know, 140 to 130. And if you look at the scores lately, they've been lower. Well, Tom Haberstroh, who runs a very good Substack called The Finder, he does a lot of like numerical research. He finds patterns and things that are going on, and then he does deep dives on them. Well, one of the patterns he found was we had Luka Doncic and Joel Embiid both score 70 points in the same week. It was a big story. And I think a lot of people, including you and I, said, as cool and as impressive as that is, there's something weird going on when multiple guys are getting 60, 70 in the same week. Well, since then, scoring has been on a steady decline in the NBA, not just one team, not just, you know, all across the NBA, and not just scoring, but free throw shooting in general. To me, and we might disagree on this, to me, foul shooting and the ability, how easy it is for offensive players to draw contact and get to the foul line is one of the number one reasons that scoring is up. And I wonder if behind the scenes, Adam Silver and the rules committee went to the officials and said, hey, we got to stop rewarding some of this stuff where offensive players hook an arm and shoot and then they get to the foul line. We got to start tightening up. And when I watched that game, I know you didn't watch it, but when I watched that game, I was shocked at how few calls were both ways. And I loved it. I was like, man, the refs are going to let them really get physical and play in this game. And guess what? It looked like a normal, regular basketball game. I loved it. And I wonder if behind the scenes, that's something that's going on where the officials are saying, all right, we got to be a little bit more judicious and when we blow our whistle.
All right. So I didn't see the piece. I need a little more context. Did it say in there, are you saying to me that that team scoring across the league is down since the All-Star game?
By about like 10 points per game. It's like a lot. It's a meaningful amount.
That's interesting.
Since the All-Star game, since like January 15th, whatever that scoring outburst was.
Okay, I got you. Because I didn't know if you were talking about just like these individual outbursts that we saw before the break. They've been completely curtailed. No one's really gone off. Like we haven't had a, you know, right. It's been forever, Adam, since we had a 50-point game. Like what's going on, you know? So I wasn't sure what you're saying. I will say this for me. And like I chime in all the time on like what I'm feeling a trend when I'm watching games and I get irritated. And sometimes it's been related to the officiating and my goodness, can we go up and down the court four times without a whistle? Like that's what the game's supposed to look like. Flow back and forth, the best athletes in the world getting up and down. Like that's what we want to watch, not whistle. I personally, my opinion, I have not been feeling that watching games this year. It was just this parade at a foul line. And that was interrupting my, you know, enjoyment of the game or was directly the reason why these numbers were getting so big. Like I personally wasn't feeling it was connected to the foul line. There's other reasons I think that that's been the case. That really wasn't one of them. Honestly, the thing I've probably been most, I don't know if irritated is the right word, just where it's taken some of my enjoyment out of watching games every night is the monotony of the possessions. It feels like you watch stretches in games and it's just one ball screen shot or quick shot, one dribble drive, kick out, 3-point shot after another for long stretches in the game without like creative play sets being run or somebody in the post like operating down there. And it's just like the monotony of it sometimes gets to me a little bit, which I don't usually feel if it's two really good teams. I won't feel that as much. It's usually when there's like one bad team, one good, or two bad teams for the most part. But it hasn't been the officiating like driving me nuts that every trip there's a whistle. Like I haven't really been feeling that. I don't know if you feel differently.
I feel very differently. It drives me nuts. What I don't like is I like contact. I think it's okay to have contact. You know, you drive to the lane, you get a little bump, like you got to play through that contact. Do you allow it in the post? But I think guys, Damian Lillard, Trae Young, you know, James Harden, Joel Embiid, Luka Doncic, these guys have just mastered the art of creating that contact and using it as a weapon so that everybody's afraid to get too close because they don't want the mild contact that doesn't really affect the shot or anything, but you get a little bump and it's like by the letter of the law. So I think that the NBA might have, you know, agreed with me and started to tighten up a little bit on those types of calls. Now, a foul is still a foul, but I just think that they're being, okay, did he create that and he's only creating it to get a foul? Let's give a little bit of leeway. And that Heat game last night, that Nuggets Heat game, it was probably the most physical game I've seen all year. I would say pretty confidently it was the most physical game I saw all year. And both teams, I think, took a while to adjust. People were upset looking at officials. And as the game went on, I think the teams just settled into it and was like, hey, they're going to let us make a lot of contact and actually play defense in this game. And it was a really fun game. It didn't take, for me personally, it didn't take anything away. But you know what? I hear from people all the time, they don't like watching Nuggets Heat. So maybe I'm different than most people.
I didn't see any of the game. I wish I had because honestly, it sounds to me like it was a lot like, which I thought was the most physical game I watched all year and was so enjoyable for me, was Nuggets Celtics, the 198 game. When I thought there, the amount of contact allowed in the post, the amount of hands and forearms on ball handlers, that's what I was used to as a player. I kind of like it to make it a little bit harder for guys. And it didn't at any point get turned into like a street brawl. It was just two really good teams, championship caliber teams, like going at it with a lot on the line and playing that way. And it just felt good that the officials allowed that. So I don't know I'm sure you recall that game. How did that compare last night to that game?
Last night was a whole other level. And some of this is the teams that were playing, right? Jokic is just physical. Aaron Gordon is physical. Those guys naturally play physical. Bam Adebayo and Jimmy Butler are physical. So some of this was who was on the court. But I just thought a lot of it was there was testing the parameters early in the game. And both teams kind of realized the refs are going to let us play. Let's just go hard at each other. Box outs were competitive. Drives were competitive. And I personally, I liked it. After the game, Michael Malone said it felt like a playoff game because of how physical it was. And I think, and he said that happy, like he was happy about that. And I will say as a final thing, because we got to get to the end here and wrap up the show for the week. But as a final thought, if this is true, if it's true that the NBA is going to allow a little bit more contact, and we obviously expect that to happen in the playoffs, I think it favors teams like Denver. Denver is not a good foul drawing team. They like to play physical. And there's a hand, like Miami Heat also benefit from this. There are teams that benefit it from it and teams that don't. I think Denver and Miami are two teams that would both benefit from the game being a little bit more physical or allowed to be more physical. All right, we got to hustle through this, legs.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to libsynads.com now. That's libsynads.com.
Every week we get out of here by asking who won the week, presented by DraftKings Sportsbook, code All-NBA. Who won the week? I've got four nominees for you. The first one, the Denver Nuggets. Now, I'm using an eight-day week here because we're really just going to do since the All-Star break, since it started on Thursday. Usually we do Friday, but we'll just go back an extra day. The Nuggets are 5-0 with wins over the Golden State Warriors, Sacramento Kings, and Miami Heat. The Heat was the only close one. Those other ones were blowout wins. They've been very impressive. The Milwaukee Bucks are 4-0 coming out of the All-Star Week. They have a win at Minnesota, which is very good. Two against Charlotte, once against Philly. But they are a plus 76 in those four games. And as I mentioned, number one defense. So four blowout wins for them. You could go with Jokic as an individual. He has four monster triple-doubles. He has a triple-double on 100% shooting. And he has a 32-16-16-4 game. Never been done before. And then you can go to Victor Wembanyama, who in five games, I believe, since the All-Star break, is averaging eight stocks. Five blocks, three steals is his average since the All-Star game. That's some weeks we have this and there's not that many good nominees. I think that's four incredible nominees.
Well, I can tell you this. Jokic is a great candidate. I'm not going with Jokic. You know why? Because he wins too much stuff. He's got two MVPs. He's got a championship. He, I don't know how many conference player of the months he's won probably or whatever.
Yeah.
He's got enough. He's not getting my Who Won the Week award, okay?
Yeah.
Because it starts to get ridiculous. Like, come on, man. Yeah. At some point, you got to say no to children. You got to say no. You can't have everything, Nikola. You have enough. And you'll get more, I'm sure, before the year's out. I'm going to go with the Bucks because of the state that they were in going into the break and the way they've responded since then. Like, because that was a huge, huge talking point. Everybody was in shock with – and we had already criticized them and not, but then we saw the Memphis game. And it was like, you got to be kidding me right now. And then they go into the break and Lillard wins a three-point shootout, wins All-Star Game MVP. And you're like, man, oh, man, yeah, but what – you know, that's not the important stuff. They came out of the break. Got it, you know, not a tough schedule. It doesn't matter. It's more about how they're playing and how they responded to that level of adversity. And so I'm going to go with the Bucks because right now, at least, they're not dealing with the daily criticism that they were dealing with up to that point. So they had a clean sheet this week, and they're starting to now reestablish, I think, the order that we assumed would be in the Eastern Conference. And let's see if that continues with the Bucks.
Let's also look at the weekend slate here as we go into the weekend. A really good slate, legs. Listen to all these games. Tonight on ESPN, Dallas is at Boston. I referenced that one earlier. Boston has the advantage here just with record-wise being at home, but I'm just curious to see. Dallas, they've been on a little bit of a run, but they've lost some ugly ones that they should have won. This will be a really good litmus test for them, and it would be a great win, probably their best win of the year if they get it. Sacramento at Minnesota, and then Indiana at New Orleans. That's three great games for Friday. Which one stands out to you?
Yeah, well, Dallas-Boston because, you know, some of the things I've said about Dallas here recently, this will be a tremendous challenge for them to go in there with the new pieces, play the best team in the league to this point on their home court. I'm absolutely going to be dialed into that game. And then I think Indiana-New Orleans is really interesting. Me, Indiana just put one on them the other day. So let's see how New Orleans responds to that.
Saturday, you get Nuggets-Lakers, which should be a good one. LeBron is going for 40,000 points. I think he's 9 points away from it, so he should get that. Jamal Murray may play in that game, so this ankle sprain that he suffered last night might not be too bad. And then on Sunday, the games we're going to be talking about on Monday, legs. Warriors at Boston. I love this one. The Warriors have been on a heater. I think, what is it, 12 of 14? That's a really good game. You got the Clippers at Minnesota. That's another game for those two teams, both in the top four of the West. You got the Knicks and Cleveland, which should be good, and then the Thunder at the Lakers. Which one of those are you most excited for?
It's actually Thunder Suns, right? Thunder at the Suns, I believe, is the game. The last.
Oh, one. Is that? Did I get this wrong? Thunder Suns. Okay, I messed up. Thunder then.
Phoenix, which is still a great game.
Just as
actually,
good.
And this is how great Sunday is. Adam, right. Sunday is so great that I've got a special assignment that day. I'm actually Scott Van Pelt. So they're flying me in that morning because of all those games you just mentioned on Sunday. Because they've added a show on Sunday night because of the NBA, basically, how good the NBA is that day. So I'm going to be in studio with them. So that's how interested I'm going to be. I'm going to be laying in a hotel room most of the day just watching game after game, getting ready to go out at SCP that night. So I'm excited about that.
Going to be great Sunday night on SportsCenter. Going to be great Monday morning on the All-NBA show. Hit that outro music and let's get to the Super Chats. Emma, what do we got? We appreciate it. By the way, always with Super Chats, we'll get to them at the end of the show, kind of like a mailbag. If you super chat us, we will read it. Teddy Hart says, idea, a work in progress. Fix the All-Star Game competitiveness on both ends by giving this incentive. The All-Star Game MVP gets to be exempt that year from the 65-game rule for league awards. Everyone will take that game personal better than money. Look, I think it's a hilarious idea, but no, we can't do this, man. Guys got to play their 65 games. But I do think it's a funny idea.
There's nothing you could just. The only thing you could honestly really do to make that game competitive and obviously I'm going to say that's very tongue in cheek, is the winning team, they get their salary guaranteed. The losing team get nothing for the year. Those players get nothing.
You want to see
what the best players in the world, like, willing to, like, literally, you know, kill themselves to win would look like. That because it's always going to be financially based. End of story. And I think, unfortunately, that ship sailed. I don't think it's coming back.
I don't know if the Players Association will go for your idea, Legs. I don't know. Cedric Exquisite says, Tim, how serious is Jamal Murray's ankle injury? And then the emoji looking up.
Well, I'm going to go. I'm going to go to Adam. Adam, you're the one. You're the expert on that, right?
Cedric Exquisite's already been watching me on these shows. I don't think it's too bad, but they do play the Lakers. They play the Suns after that. I would bet he misses the Lakers game, sadly. I hope I'm wrong, but I would bet he misses that one and is back on Tuesday when they take on the Phoenix Suns. Everybody, great week of shows. We really appreciate it. You help us grow the show. Share it on social media. A well-written review, whether it's on Apple Podcasts, whether it's on Twitter, whether it's on Instagram, really helps us out. We can share that with other people to let other people know that you're enjoying the show. So we appreciate every time you share our show on social and say something nice about us. We hope you enjoyed it this week. Have a great weekend. Hit that like button for us on the way out. We all silly like the mayor.